It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. It's a very exciting time because it looks like we have hit the what they used to call the gold master for the next big Windows update. Paul and Mary Jo will explain all. We'll also try to explain the recovery options for Windows 10. They're multifarious and in many places. But Paul will do an excellent job of telling you where to find them. We'll also talk about the latest from HoloLens and a whole lot more. And my new laptop coming tomorrow. That's coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 615, recorded Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019. You had me at Alcatraz. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Pulseway, the ridiculously cool IT management software that lets you remotely monitor and control IT systems from any device. It's enabling busy admins to fix issues on the go and be more productive. Try it free for 14 days at pulseway.com/twit. And by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at WordPress.com. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/Windows. And by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at Capterra.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we take two.
Where we covet.
Where we covet all the Windows. Paul Thurrott, he's the coveter in chief at Thurrott.com, Thurro.com. Mary Jo Foley, she's at ZDNet, all about Microsoft.com. And thank you. I just want to start the show by saying thank you, Chris Capicella, for making my Monday okay.
Slightly less aggravating.
Yeah.
The memo went out. In fact, The Verge, somebody leaked it to The Verge, I think. And they said, you know, guys, let's not do the April Fool's Day thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was, thank you, Chris. I love you, man.
It had an interesting effect.
I didn't see almost any jokes.
Well, that's what's interesting. I think.
Well, Google still does their stuff, right?
I didn't see any Google. I didn't.
Oh, there was a terrible, it's like a Google app that cleans your screen, like if you have gunk on your screen. Like,
please.
It may, like, now that Chris Capicella has written this memo and it's kind of been out in the world, you view, I mean, I've always hated the April Fool stuff, but it just looks, you look at it in a different light. It makes it even dumber, you know?
It's so
I like
dumb.
That he's ruined it.
No, he made it better for us because everybody dreads April Fool's Day. Nobody wants to go on the net.
No, we had to have a memo a while ago at ZDNet just saying to the reporters, don't do it. No,
because the one meme I didn't appreciate that day was someone was saying, you know, it's like April 1st, the one day of the year where the discerning web user actually thinks about things they read on the internet, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, Google. It's such a waste. I thought, you know, Google's April Fool's was killing Inbox, Google Plus. God, that was depressing.
Only.
That was April 2nd. And that was so depressing to watch. You know, basically Google Plus like was in hospice care, and then
it's weird.
They pulled the plug.
Google Inbox is still there on the web.
What?
Yeah, I keep checking, and you just reminded me again.
I thought it was gone. No.
No.
Well, if you use the app,
Inbox
stops working.
Inbox.google.com.
Although people say that the server is still up, and because you can use an old APK of the app. And it'll still work. So I don't understand the ways of the Goog. Anyway, honestly, I know Chris, or at least he pretends to listen to the show.
I think he does.
I think he genuinely
he really does.
Does.
So let's
or he has people
let's
who
stroke
do it.
Him a little bit more, shall we?
Yeah.
Chris is such a nice guy.
Good looking too, don't you feel?
Like he is. He's a good looking man.
Yeah.
I don't usually go down that path, but I have to agree with you on that.
Sometimes a guy is so good looking, you just can't help but say, man, that's a good looking man. For Chris now, we're really good.
He'll definitely be on the Christmas show this year.
No, I just was really grateful to him. And I know he didn't make it public, but it was made public. And that was really a good thing. And I think it did inspire a lot of blogs and other people to kind of think twice about doing it. And man, it makes our life a lot easier, that's for sure.
Yes.
Somebody in the chat room says, the only people who don't like April Fools are reporters. No one else cares if they're momentarily tricked. Oh, I think you do. I think they do.
This is like the new form of, I don't mean to accuse this person of web bullying, but it's like, it's the new form of web bullying, which is like, if you don't like what I like.
You're just a, because you're a tech reporter.
You're just a jerk.
Tech reporters. You don't live in the real world. Welcome to your bubble.
Remember the time we got out to San Francisco at the last minute for a Microsoft event. I think it was for the original Windows. When they announced the Insider program that trip, the Oracle thing. Remember? Mm-hmm. And so I had to stay at this terrible seedy hotel. It was so bad.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah,
I took my bags with me when I left. I didn't trust anything. I just was scared to death of this place. I got physically attacked by a homeless person at 5:30 in the morning ish. Going over to get breakfast, and then I complained about it on a podcast. I mentioned it, and someone accused me of being elite East Coast blogger. You know, doesn't like the gritty side of
real life. I got you put up at the Yale Club. I'm sorry you. I did.
You're not elite enough, apparently. The other night, I was thinking fondly of that night, as opposed to my morning in San Francisco, which was horrific.
It's like, and I don't like this one either. People are going to get mad at me, but I hate it when people say, oh, first world problem.
Yeah.
As if they're living in the third world or something.
Well, complaining because the orange juice was small in first class on the way to some destination is absolutely a first world problem. But I do live in a first world country, sort of, you know, like, sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the problems I have.
Right. I could have other problems, but thank God I don't.
I'm not Madonna. I'm not going to go to Africa. You know, like, I'm sorry. Like, I just.
Paul and I are curmudgeons together. Mary Jo's probably cringing, but we're curmudgeons together. Let us, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail the conversation.
I liked where that was.
But I really felt Chris deserved a thank you. And
yes.
I agree.
I'm glad he did that. Big news, and now I'm wondering, because I'm getting a new Windows laptop tomorrow, and then hitting the road.
Yeah,
will I have a chance to?
If you should install.
Yeah. What should?
So my recommendation is no.
No.
And the reason is there's because
don't be a Sika.
No, it's not that. In other words, what I mean is 1903. Like you don't want to get that.
Oh no,
you could do it. 1809,
though.
Is official. Oh,
But I mean,
it's got to have 1809 on it. It just was made. It was born yesterday.
But the backdrop of this is that 1903 is probably complete as we speak. It's probably.
Right. And that's what I'm wondering. But I would have to be an insider to get it, right?
I would.
Well, but.
Don't put 1903.
No, don't.
You could. I mean, you could join the Insider program, sign up for fast.
Okay.
Reboot, go to Windows Update, install the build.
Yeah.
And then sign out, and you'll probably be fine. The truth is, you'll probably be fine.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. Or do nothing.
No, his machine will probably come with 1803 on it, I bet.
Probably. Maybe, yeah. Not 1809.
And then I would say you could go get 1809 and feel safe.
I'm sorry. If you are on 1803 and 1809 is there, yes, you should do that.
The reason I say this is I'm leaving the day after. I get it tomorrow. I'm leaving Friday. Now, admittedly, Hawaii is not a third world nation.
Right. You'll still be able to download or upload.
Yeah. But I will be on hotel Wi-Fi. So I'm here. I have 10 gigabits down. So, of course, the laptop's only going to do one. But at least I'd like to
to do this would be there's something about 1903 that makes so much sense that you just got to have it. And I just don't think
there's nothing. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I think that's good advice.
Yeah.
And 1809, probably worth doing it because it is now officially cleared for landing.
Yes, it only took 6 months or whatever that is.
Right. And okay, so this was so funny how they did this too. On Thursday last week, day after we do Windows Weekly, they literally post three paragraphs. hidden away on a tech community blog, and it says Windows 10 version 1809 now designated for broad deployment. That's it. They didn't call us. They didn't tell us. They didn't blog about it. No, like this, it was just like, here you go. We're, here it is. It's all set now. We're good. It was just so understated.
I'd like to offer our services to Microsoft. the effectiveness of the communication there is in some negative category. And this is absolutely something that should have been revealed in a blog post as a public announcement. Period.
Yeah. I saw it.
There's no reason to hide this.
No, the only reason I even saw it is I saw somebody on Twitter say, hey, I think 1809 has been cleared for business deployment. And I'm thinking, has it? And I started looking around and I'm like, there's no blog post. Where is it? And then I saw this and I was like, oh, that's it. Yep. It's now cleared for broad deployment. And
the thing that bugs me is like, I don't believe that there was ever a conversation between any two individuals at Microsoft. I said, you know, do we need to maybe put this on blogs.microsoft or windows.com? I honestly think it just never occurred to anybody. Like,
well, you know, I think part of what they're trying to do now is to get businesses to think about when they should deploy feature updates differently. So their idea now is instead of giving them this like semi-annual channel targeted, then semi-annual channel, we're just going to say to them, you know what, when it comes out for consumers, you should start testing it in your company. And when you think it's ready, then you should deploy it. I think that's what they're trying to get.
So the consumers are like the people they send up over the top to run forward into the machine guns.
Right.
And then see how that goes.
Right.
And then the businesses are like the officers who stay in the trench.
Watching.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Yes. It's ready.
Yep. You
know, like enough bodies are piled up, you're not going to get killed then.
Right. So they have this thing they call the release information page, which is this obscure page on docs.microsoft.com. And there when they put a line in there that says Microsoft now recommends, and you see semi-annual channel and the list, that's when it's cleared for business. But in the past, up until now, they've given us a lot of like heads up on that. They'll like call us early, put us under NDA, say, we want you to blast this from the mountaintop, right? Ready for business deployment. This time, no. And part of it is because it's so delayed, right?
I was going to just ask you that. Yeah. Do you think that that's why? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, remember, this first came out in early October 2018. That's when they pulled it like a few days afterwards because of the data deletion bug. And then they had a zip bug and they had a bunch of other bugs and it just kept being pushed back.
This was
back.
The one where, remember, they skipped one of the phases of release.
They skipped release preview, right?
Yeah, they went from slow ring to release and they did it to arbitrarily hit the date of some Surface event.
Right.
Remember, they could just kind of announce it. Well, they did. They've never done that before.
I mean, that's why we think they did it.
Yeah.
Right. So it's out now. If you're a business and you've been holding off, waiting for this magic number to happen, the day when they say it's ready, it's happened now. And so you should feel safe in deploying it.
And if you are a business and we're in fact waiting for that, I'd like to hear from you. I'm confused why you'd be waiting for this. what's the selling point? Like I told you,
I was holding off on seeking because I was so nervous about getting it. And then when it got pushed to me on my HP and I'm like, okay, I'm going to deploy it now. And nothing happened. Nothing bad happened. Let's just say 1809 will not go down and infamy for being a great release.
So maybe I should just stay at 1803.
It's safe now.
What an encouraging thing to say. No, no, it's safe. That tiger hasn't been around for months.
I've had no problems whatsoever on the HP. Okay. Although, you know, I still don't think it's been offered to me on the Surface Go, but I should recheck
that. That's so weird.
Yeah.
It feels like it should have been.
They'll get it right next time. Don't worry about it.
Well, we're about to find out because 1903 is coming up fast, right?
It comes.
That's right. And remember last week I had the tip about the magic window, and then I was nervous that maybe it was 2 weeks ago. I was nervous last week that might have been a bit premature. But based on what Microsoft just did with the Slow Ring, which was fix a bug that was preventing the install of that build, it looks like that build of, I don't know, what is it, 2-3 weeks ago now, is in fact the final build. That doesn't mean they're not going to increment it on the minor end of the decimal point there, but I believe we're there. And so if you're interested in the Magic Windows stuff, you know, we were testing 19H1 or 19.03. You like to stay there for a little while. You can safely unenroll, he says with great confidence.
You look confident.
Do I?
No.
Look, we've had last year happened. We can't deny it. There's always the possibility that this is not correct. But like I said last week, the good news is if you do have to go back and install a new build for some reason, it's not actually a terrible process. It won't be as painful as it was, you know, previously.
We got a campaign to get everybody to make a boot, USB boot.
Yes.
So that they can do that painlessly. Yeah. You should always have that. I don't know. Used to be computers would come with that, you know, goofy DVD that you, the restore. Right. Remember the restore discs?
Yep.
Yeah.
But now it's so easy. You just make a USB key. Mm-hmm. You can do it right from within Windows, right?
The Microsoft has an online tool for this.
Yeah. People just do not do it.
I talk to people all the time on the radio show, and I bet you a lot of people who are listening to Windows Weekly even. And I tell them, you got to make this, you know, just make it. That's the first thing I'm going to do out of the box is make a recovery disk.
You could even, there's multiple versions of this, right? Obviously, your PC maker may supply a tool to make an install disk that's specific to your computer. You can go to download.windows.com to get the ISO tool. You could do it that way. There's a tool in Windows that's actually built off of Defender now for some reason because they got to hide the stuff everywhere. Let me just look to be sure. Called Fresh Start.
That's interesting. The Fresh Start tool.
Yeah, device performance and health. Yeah, Fresh Start. So if you go into what's now called Windows Security, it was Windows Defender before Windows Defender Advanced Security, blah, 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 whatever it is, and go into device performance and health, you'll see an entry in there called Fresh Start. That one's particularly interesting because unlike the reset tool in Windows, this will give you the base installed Windows without any PC Maker stuff. And there's some pros and cons to that, but it will be a clean install of Windows, which might be useful as well.
Yeah, that's almost what I'd want to have.
Yeah, but you want to be sure. So the thing you don't want is to reboot the computer and then end up without a network connection, right? That's less likely on a modern computer, but it does still happen sometimes. No one normal would ever do this, but it wouldn't be a bad idea to try it, you know, before it's important. Mm-hmm. And make sure that it what comes up is usable out of the box, right? Meaning base usable to me is network connection over anything else. So at least you can go to the PC Maker website and get the utility or get the drivers you need.
Mm-hmm. So this Fresh Start program, you run it, and then it says, okay, we're going to wipe your system now. Do you want to keep your files or not?
So, yeah.
Does it download the operating system from the internet?
Yeah, it does. So it's basically a front end to that ISO tool that Microsoft has.
Right, but not...
So
you could put that on a USB key?
Yeah, I think.
I mean, it's not very big.
With great confidence. no, you don't want that. What you want to do is initiate... So if you want that on a USB key, the better thing to do is look up, you know, Google download Windows 10 ISO.
The media creation.
Because that's the same thing, and that will give you the bootable tool. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure if this one does it or not, but it's basically an alternative to the PC reset tool that's also available through settings. But that tool can be modified and is modified by PC makers, and so they'll include their own software on there, their own drivers, and some other things. This is literally the clean image that Microsoft provides.
This is nice, yeah. So you need an internet connection to download the tool in the Windows 10 image.
Mm-hmm. It's not on your computer.
It's 3 gigabytes, over 3 gigabytes.
Yep, because that's the size of the ISO.
But the download itself, the tool is small. It downloaded in seconds.
What I'd rather see is Microsoft offer the... Well, the other thing, you get the shipping version of Windows. So if you're on a... if you've moved forward, you're not going to get the 19H1 or what, not yet. So there's some advantages to that too, but... I'd rather see PC Reset offer you this when you run that utility, that everything could be on disk. It would be whatever the version you have is on disk. But you would have an option. Do you want to include the PC Maker stuff? And I'm guessing they don't do that for political reasons, because I think a lot of people would see that and say, yeah, I don't want that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, there's a lot of Lenovo stuff I don't want, but there are some critical update tools I do want. Yes. And, of course, drivers.
Yep. Yeah, you need that utility that Lenovo makes that installs the drivers and does right. system checks and things like that. Yeah,
right. The yep. Lenovo Vantage.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's actually good. That fresh start thing, that's a good tip. Thank you. I will.
Well, it's just, it's so hidden. It's I don't think most people even know it's there.
No.
You can I wonder Google why they not, did put it there under Defender. Yeah.
I don't know. It's goofy to me that, like I said, it's weird that those are two different things, PC reset and fresh mm-hmm. start. It's weird to me that they're available from different locations from each other. Like if they were both under recovery tools in settings, that would be fine. Putting them on in Defender because it's sort of a performance type thing. It's called Windows Security for some reason, even though it's not security or not just security, but it's related to, what does it say, performance and health, right? And so there's...
Yeah, it's in the device performance and health section of the
Yeah, you Windows may end up here setting. Because something's gone wrong and it, you right. know, one of the right. last-ditch things you could do is like, we'll reset the system.
Yeah.
But why would you use the other thing? Like, why would there be a right. different thing? I don't know. It's kind of...
Well, also, what is the difference? It's not immediately clear what the difference is.
No.
Yeah.
But fortunately for everybody, I've written a book.
Your thinking is right. It's about politics. It's about politics, right. for sure.
I think so.
So normally, if you do the reset, it takes the version of Windows that's in your hidden Windows partition, your installed partition.
Yeah, so there's two aspects to that, one of which is very important, that make it different from the other thing. One is that, like I said, your PC maker can and will modify it.
Yep.
Which, you know, pros and cons to that, for sure.
And in theory, so could bad guys.
Yep. But yeah, okay, that's fair.
It could be malware.
And then, yeah. And then the other aspect is that it's going to be whatever version of Windows you're currently on, right? And so the thing gets updated as you move along. And so if you're on the Insider program, one of the goofy things is you might want to go back to a previous version of Windows, and you basically have to go to the web, download the ISO tool, and get it that way, or use
Fresh Start,
because when you use PC Reset, it's taking it right on the disk. It's like what I would think of as like an offline installer. So it's whatever happens to be on the disk, which is always the latest version. Yeah. And you might not always want the latest version, may be too forward leaning if you're Insider. It's like it's the next version.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's a good tip. Thank you.
Yep. I don't think anyone knows about it.
No, I never heard about it. Yeah.
I remember when they talked about it, was it like a year ago or something? But it was very low key when they introduced it.
It's basically a network install of Windows, which I think is a really nice thing to have. Apple does that, and there's times when you want that.
Yep. But like I said, I feel like this should be one thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
There
if
could
they
be a third
it.
Setting in the
yes
in the refresh your PC.
That's how it should be.
Yeah,
it'd be kind of neat if you could go through and say like, I want this version of Windows. I want I don't want the PC maker or God forbid you actually get a choice. You know, I want the, their utility for updating drivers and whatnot, which, you know, by the way, is super important to have. I don't want the other stuff. No PC maker would ever want you to have that choice.
No. Nope.
So that's why it's political, because
I think
the OEMs have their way they'd like you to do it.
Yep. Which, you know, again, it's not insidious, right? They want you as their customer to have a good experience. And they don't want you having to call them, mm-hmm. right? They want it just to work. So they've put together what they believe is an optimal install. Well, maybe they don't believe that. But
now, if I do the recovery media creator in Windows, is that going to be the OEM's recovery media? I mean, like have all the OEM stuff? Or is that because it's a Microsoft thing.
If you go to PC Reset and Settings, which is under Updates and Security. If you go to Update and Security and Settings, then to Recovery, it says Reset this PC.
No, I'm talking about I typed Windows Key Recovery Drive. Recovery Drive. And that gave me a desktop app called Recovery Drive. Maybe that's a...
Oh, no, that's just a Recovery Drive. So that's...
it's from Microsoft.
Yeah, it's when your computer's not booting properly,
right.
You can boot off of this.
Well, that's what I was suggesting people do, is make that, right?
Yes. Oh, you should do that too, for sure.
Yeah.
So this is a different recovery tool.
And that's
it doesn't
got the,
blast Windows
That's
back
got the
on
OEM
computer.
Stuff, though, right? Oh, it doesn't. Oh, it's not a reinstall.
No, it shouldn't matter.
The PC, it says you'll be able to use this to reinstall Windows.
You can, but that it's not on the disk.
Oh, okay.
So, for example, if you actually have a Windows 10 ISO-based USB drive or a disk. That can also be used as a recovery drive.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
instead of, it's, you can right. Instead of going through setup, there's a little option at the bottom that says access recovery tools. There's a lot. This is
very confusing.
It's called Windows and Field Guide.
Yeah. Oh, could you write a book about this? Thank you.
I did. And it's described. So the number of these tools has made it difficult to write about, you know, because I think different people might listen to this little rundown of what each one does and say, oh, yeah, I want this. And I don't, to me, you shouldn't really have a choice. There should be Windows 10 recovery tools, and among the options, you should be able to blow away and return to a previous version, or blow away, and you know, it should be one thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know why
with options, so that you can clearly see the distinction.
I think they're trying to make it.
Stuff. Yeah,
I was going to say they're trying to make it simple on people, but I think they've just in doing so they've made it more complex.
Yeah. Well, no matter where you look, you can find a recovery option.
No, I mean, for sure. If you have a Surface device, by the way, you have another option for recovery. Surface devices have their own unique cloud-based restore capabilities, and those have images that are specific to that hardware. So I'm not, let's not go down that rabbit hole, but if you can get into the firmware, you can trigger that if you want.
Wow.
You might have to type in a BitLocker key, so get ready for that.
Someday, everything that you need to recover will be already built into the hardware, the firmware. Maybe that's not a good idea because it's hard to update.
Well, that's an excellent idea. And you're right, there should be a reserved hidden partition that's protected that has...
Not even on a hard drive. Like you could pop the hard drive, put in a fresh hard drive, boot into thing from BIOS.
It's just a separate storage device. It'd be a little thing, just a tiny little component.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's exactly how it should be. But the fact that it's not like this, and the fact that there are multiple recovery tools, all of which work a little differently, is the reason that I'm an insane person.
It's the reason you have a job and a book.
It's trying to keep track of this is difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
I guess.
It's good to know all of this stuff. And thank God for the Windows Field Guide, Windows 10 Field Guide.
Yeah, sure.
That is available right now at leanpub.com.
That's true.
There it is. What more to say about 1809? It's now back on the slow ring. What? I don't understand that.
So 1809 is done.
Yes.
We're all set with that. It's That's going fine. Out to everyone. Okay. Now we're talking about 1903.
Oh, this is 1903. Okay.
No, yeah. I mistyped. That was my fault.
Yep. There it is. It just appeared magically in the notes.
Magically.
I don't know why I didn't see that, Leo, but it clearly says 1903.
Right. 1903, maybe which is the spring update. Check,
that's what I mean? So that's what we were talking about. That's the one with maybe I should, you know. So that'll
maybe
be on the slow ring.
Do that.
But I'm not going to do that. Yeah. And what's the GSOD anti-cheat bug?
Green screen of death.
Green screen of death, GSOD instead of BSOD.
Yeah.
And this was that thing where some people who were running anti-cheat software were running into issues against 1903. But now Microsoft's saying many games that use anti-cheat software have released fixes for the issue. So they're not, the PCs will no longer bug.
Did it list which games did that, Mary Jo, or did they just say most games?
they said many.
So the GSOD is something called bug check?
It's a blue screen. Beta, it's green during the beta.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
But, you know, a lot of people kept saying, 1903, there's no way that can be RTM because they have this problem with the anti-cheat software. But it sounds like, we believe it has RTM.
Okay.
Anyway, and it's gone forward. So.
And the fix there was the games, not Windows.
Yeah.
It's like the game makers fixed that.
Well, that was the question I had last week, right? Remember I said, you know, I'd given the advice about the magic window, and then a week later I said, you know, I don't know how they're going to address these problems. One way to address it would be you could have cumulative updates for previous versions. You could do fixes to games, obviously, in this case, or you could increment the build, you know. If they increment the build, you're going to have to download the build again and go back, go back and forth out of Insider. So it's not 100%, but I believe what we're seeing here is that we won't have to worry about the magic window issues. I think it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then, according to Donna Sakar via Mary Jo Foley, there's a glitch causing build 18.362 to fail to install for some slow ring users.
Yeah.
But
they just fixed that too, didn't they?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I believe that. If you go back to the Microsoft post, I believe that's addressed at the top.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I think just recently that got addressed. So yeah. It's all systems go, we think, for 1903. Looks
and
like
And again, high degree of confidence.
High.
The highest high. Level of confidence we can have with this stuff.
Yep.
So there's an update that will get 18.356.16 back into compliance, and then you can get 18.362.
Right.
And
so what that means to me, well, actually it means almost nothing to me. So this is like a, well, no, in other words, what I'm trying to think through here is what this would mean to people, like normal people. So this is a bug that they fixed in one beta version of Windows 10 that lets it upgrade successfully to another beta version of Windows 10. Will this ever impact normal users? No. Mm-hmm. Because that upgrade, you know, beta over beta thing is something they'll never do. All they have to do is go to the final version. So unless that bug is in, you know, the bug that it was in the beta is in the shipping version of 18.09 or 18.03 or whatever, this is not something anyone will have to worry about. If it is in those versions, that will be fixed by a cumulative update, which you'll get through Windows Update, before you are given the ability to get 1903, so you'll never have to worry about it.
Yep.
Yay.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
Again, hugely confident in what I just said. I can see no problems.
If all the stars align perfectly.
I hate to even say anything in any kind of absolute term anymore. It's just so impossible to.
Yeah.
It's the exact opposite of how I want to be.
You should say, but that's how it should work.
That's how it should work.
I could. My whole life is based around that's how it should work. Right. I just described the 14 different recovery tools built into Windows 10. That's how that should work.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm feeling good.
I'm feeling confident. Let's make you feel bad. How are eBooks doing in Windows 10, there, Joe?
Dad, why is this even a story? I don't even know. I mean, I know why it's a story, but why is it a big deal? Who cares? Did you buy a lot of eBooks?
Actually, so let's get to that in a moment.
Okay, so first, what happened? Oh, you have something else you want to say?
No, let's talk about what happened.
Okay, what happened?
So yesterday, April 2nd, Microsoft put out a customer support article that said, by the way, we're removing ebook content from the store. Hmm. And then if you went to the store 1 minute after that article came out, it was gone. Yeah.
By the way,
there wasn't a heads up.
I just brought up an older computer last night. And I thought, oh, this will be interesting because the store will still have books.
Nope.
And so I brought up the store app and it said books and then it went boop. It disappeared as I was looking at it.
Right.
So, yeah.
So they said, if you bought books through the Microsoft store, you're going to get a full refund. They're going to email you details how to get it. And if you did any annotations in your books or anything like that, you're even going to get like 25 cents credit for each annotation. So they're really making good on the book stuff. The books are that you have, if you bought them through there, are going to just disappear July 2nd. Like they're going to be on your device and then they're going to be gone. That's it.
Yeah.
So why is this a big story? How many people really bought books through Microsoft Store? I have no idea. I have zero
It's got to be a tiny number of people.
I never did. Did you ever?
I did, but I had to write about it for the book. So, you know, I did it to, you know, test things.
You did it as a test.
I 2 years ago, when this capability was coming in the then new Creators Update, I wrote an editorial about why you should never trust Microsoft with content. And, you know, God, I love being right just as much as the next guy. But, I mean, the thing I, you know, warned readers about was that this is a company that has never successfully done content. You should never buy movies from Microsoft. You should never buy music. You should never buy books. You know, aside from the illogical nature of reading books on a computer, you know, I realize there are exceptions to that. If you have a Surface Pro or Surface Go, you know, it's not a horrible form factor for that kind of thing. I get it. But they're just not trustworthy with this kind of thing. They're super trustworthy in other areas. But I think when it comes to content and consumption type things, you want to look elsewhere. And in ebooks specifically, I would say Amazon Kindle, obviously. I guess, and then there's some B-level things like the Nook or Barnes & Noble or even Apple iBooks, whatever they call it now, Apple Books. You'd never trust Microsoft with that kind of thing. The reason I feel, again, confident is clearly the theme of this. So I feel confident in saying that not many people did this because they're offering them refunds, right?
Right.
There wasn't a big enough market of users for them to even go to someone else and say, hey, what if we paid you something to bring these guys on board and you could give them the books out of your library and you get new customers? And the amount that they would have to pay out was so little, they were like, let's just take this one time hit. No one's going to notice this in earnings, whatever. It's nothing. The number of people who would have made annotations in these ebooks using like a Surface Pen or something is just going to be infinitesimally small. And by the way, if you're going to try to beat the system and grab a couple of free ebooks and start making annotations, you can't. That they only apply to annotations made before April 2nd.
April 2nd.
So you can't just download them and or can you?
I mean, they're not there anymore.
they're gone.
That was quick.
Yeah.
2 years. So,
but even quick after the notification, like you didn't really have time to.
Which honestly was the most amazing thing about it. And I think it's tied to the annotation thing. Because I think they knew that people would go in and start making annotations, right? If they gave them a warning or something. Like I don't know. I don't know. But I did find the abruptness of it to be rather strange.
Now, if you bought a book already, you can still download it till July, it says, right?
Till July, yeah.
Yeah. So if you own books, you can download them. And they're, by the way, I mean, I don't know what format Microsoft stores those in, but there are plenty of programs like Calibre that will take that format and put it in a Kindle format or something.
Well, it's DRM protected, but it's an EPUB based format. Okay.
A protected EPUB.
Yeah.
I bet you. I'm not going to say it's possible, but I bet you it's possible.
Well, maybe that will be a tip for a future week. Here's how you can break into the DRM on your Edge eBooks for some reason. I don't know.
If it's EPUB, I bet you there's ways to.
Oh, I'm positive you're right. I just don't think there's a big market for this. So you asked if this was a big deal, and the answer is no, not taken in isolation. I don't think in the scheme of, like Google Inbox being killed or Google Plus or whatever. No. But you know what? In the death of 1,000 cuts that is Microsoft retreating from the consumer space, this is one of the smaller cuts for sure. It's the latest cut, but it's that cumulative effect.
What if we
back to back,
What if we characterize this as Microsoft getting out of the content business?
Yeah,
because they stopped music, right? They stopped.
But they still have movies and TV.
Well,
right?
But watch.
Yeah,
that's got to be next.
I think. Thank you. That's exactly what I believe. And people have said, "Well, there's no way they would ever kill the movie thing." I watch movies on my Xbox all the time, Yeah, no, I often take a Battleship to the store when I need to get a gallon of milk. But, there are more efficient ways to do stuff like that. And so the thing I've said to people is like, look, if you have a Surface Pro or some kind of device like that and you're going to travel or you're going whatever, and you use this, you read on it, you watch movies on it, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
But renting movies, third-party service instead.
Well, if you're going to rent, it doesn't matter, right? You can rent movies from anywhere.
It'll be good for 2 days.
Once you start watching it,
they won't pull the plug for 2 days.
If you're going to buy content from Microsoft, like literally just movies, I've always recommended against that. The past couple, 6-8 months, whatever it's been, they are compatible with movies anywhere. So,
that's good.
So if you want to buy a movie from them that is compatible with that, there's a safety net of sorts for that content. And I think that's going to be their route, right? Mm-hmm. They may have to give partial refunds to people whenever this service is killed. But I firmly believe that they're going to kill the movies and TV service. It makes no sense. And when they introduced this ebook service 2 years ago, I was like, what?
Why are you competing against
of all
Amazon?
The things you could be doing? Like, this is like the most pointless.
Well, okay. You know, when they did it, you know what I thought they were doing it for? I always thought this in the back of my head. I thought they were going to do something for students with textbooks.
Oh.
I really did.
Yeah,
like,
Apple did
I kept thinking, That makes sense because they're targeting the education market. Remember, yep. I mean, in 2012, they did that big deal with Barnes & Noble where they invested $300 million to work on an e-reader with Barnes & Noble. And then that whole thing fell apart. Right.
The Wookie.
Right. Never happened. But I thought they were doing it for education. That was what I always kind of thought in the back of my mind.
There are tiny use cases for this thing that kind of made sense. If you were a developer, for example, and you wanted to buy an ebook version of a developer book and use it side by side with Visual Studio or something, like, okay, I could see that. I still would recommend getting something else, but whatever. I mean, maybe. But there's not really a big market there for that kind of stuff. Mm. I looked into putting my book on their store. I thought it would be a natural fit. In fact, you'd think they would come to me or to other people who have written Windows 10 books. And the process was actually so convoluted and actually so painfully expensive that it was like, there's no way. You know, there's no way. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I don't mean to say that it was a bad store or a good store. I don't really, like most people, I kind of ignored it. But the times that I looked at it, it was like, okay. But, you know, what I always come back to is, do I want to read books in a web browser on my computer? And the answer is no. And remember the time when this came out was when Windows 10 feature updates were really big updates. And they were turning Edge into this thing that was much more than a web browser. It was a reader. And it could do PDF files, EPUBs, eBooks, you know, and then web pages, obviously. It had its own reading mode. And the thing that was goofy about all that stuff, is still goofy about that in the current version of Edge, is that the tools that were available to you, the way they were laid out, the way the thing looked, is actually different between all of those experiences. Mm-hmm. And so if you kind of think about it like the conversation we just had about recovery tools, it's kind of the same thing. Why do these look so different? Why are they all so different? You know, the same. You have the same basic capabilities. You can annotate a PDF. You can annotate an EPUB file. You can annotate a web page. But the way that those things work is completely different. And the way they look is completely different. It's just, it's bizarre.
Yeah, that's odd.
Yeah.
Going back to why are we even talking about this right now? It is the whole... Can you trust Microsoft with consumer products and services? And so many people were pinging me on Twitter when this happened yesterday. And I just said to each one, I said, I feel fine saying this. I don't trust Microsoft with anything that's a consumer only product or service.
Right.
I would not buy from them.
I'll take this a step further. I don't believe it with small exceptions, like movies and TV still exist. And that is absolutely a consumer service. It's tiny. This is not a job one at Microsoft. I don't believe they make any major consumer products or services at all.
Oh, Xbox.
Like at all.
Everyone
points to Xbox.
Yeah.
No, not except Xbox. I don't think Xbox is a consumer service. You know, gaming in Xbox today is not a casual consumer consumption experience. You have to be a fairly hardcore gamer to plop down $300 to $500 on a console, $60 a game, hook it up to a 4K display and possibly whatever speaker system you have to play video games, right? Mm-hmm. A consumer video game market is you have games in an app store on a phone and you're standing in line and you have a few minutes to kill and you don't really care what happens. Like I don't think Microsoft's gaming platform, whatever you want to call it, even qualifies as a consumer service. Mm-hmm. You know, even like they sell things.
I just mean business versus consumer. I don't mean
I understand.
Casual.
I mean,
but
the way I would think of it is individuals versus businesses, right? Mm-hmm. And so on the side of individuals, they make things like Outlook.com and OneDrive and Office 365 that are productivity focused services that are somewhat like their business services, mm-hmm. but aimed at individuals or families, mm-hmm. you know, in some cases. But they're not, you know, it's not like they don't have a thing that helps you make greeting cards. They don't have cute little, you know, like if you look at what Apple does, I mean, and Apple and Microsoft are completely different kinds of companies, but you can kind of see the divide there. You know, Microsoft stuff is very much focused on productivity, I would say, for end users of all kinds, business or consumer, right? But as far as like true consumer services... My mother may pull out a phone and play some little cute game on her phone. Maybe She's never going to subscribe to Xbox Live Gold. Right? She's never going to buy an Xbox. She's never going to do VR. She's never doing that stuff. And I think that elevates it past what I would call a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So movies and TV is next. It's one of the only things left.
Yeah, it is one of the only things left. Like, what else is there? They already killed the band services and the band dashboard, right?
Health.
They killed
I just Groove. Got the email about health. Microsoft Health. Gone.
Yep. Groove is basically gone the way now.
Do you think Nadella is behind this? Like, this is kind of a strategy.
I think they look at what is this making money for us? No. Yeah. X.
Don't waste scarce engineering resources on stuff that isn't important.
It has to tie into the whole strategy, and it has to have a natural upgrade path is the wrong term. But if you are a like I said, it's individuals versus what I think of as consumers, right? So if you have a couple of people who are using Microsoft Office on their computers in a family maybe, and one of them goes out and starts a little small business and maybe they keep using it, and now they need like an upgrade path to actual business software, Microsoft might be the obvious choice. And so it makes sense for those things. They're complementary, you know? But you're not going to get even a kid playing an Xbox is not going to arrive at work as his first day out of college and be like, I've been using an Xbox for the past 6 years. I hope you guys use some Microsoft software. I mean, there's no natural, the symbiosis there occurs on the back end, right? It's because gaming is going into online services, and that's where Microsoft's got a lot of strengths.
Right.
I don't know. I think there's a little, you're clear-headed about it, but I think out in the world, there's still a little bit of delusion around this, and it's getting chipped away every single time.
I know.
They kill something, you know? And Groove is in many ways the worst example. Well, the Windows Phone was terrible too, but they chip away at it. They don't just kill it. They take parts of it away. It's like, hey, we're going to take your arm off, big guy. Sorry about that. And you go back to the doctor the next time. It's like, we're going to take your other arm off. And like, eventually you're like, well, what's left here? Like, you're just removing all of these
Cortana's
vital
like that,
components.
Right?
Yes. Oh, so Cortana. Cortana
that's still there.
Next.
That's still there.
That might be next. Right?
No, you know, Cortana's not going to go away.
No, but
it's
as an end...
It's just going to be completely rebuilt.
Yes, but as an end user-facing service, I think it is going to go away.
Oh, yeah.
Think about... Here's two reasons. They're separating it in Windows 10, right?
Yeah.
They've never made it available around the world on mobile, right?
No, it will. It'll go away as a front-facing, like the way you think of Alexa and Siri and all that. It's not that anymore. It's this under the covers kind of thing that'll help you coordinate your meetings and book a conference room, which are all good things. But again, back to focus on business and not to focus on consumers.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that. Again, they can talk about consumers all they want. And the gaming thing is obviously interesting and a big deal, but there's no reason for Microsoft to even bother with that stuff.
You know, I feel like they should stop talking about consumers and talk about prosumer, because that's who they're targeting, right?
Right.
They're targeting people who want to use their services, even if it's at home, for a business or productivity use.
So with all the free stuff out in the world, why would any individual choose Microsoft and choose to pay for Microsoft software, right? And actually, when you think about it, a gamer is as much a prosumer as someone who buys a Surface device. Mm-hmm. You know, you're making a very specific decision that this is going to be, you know, I'm investing some money here. I'm going to use this thing a lot, you know, and I care what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I think the thing Google's going for with Stadia or whatever else might come along those lines are there'll be some gamers who really do care what's going on. But I think a lot of the people they're shooting for are just normal people. I don't think they're really, they're not hardcore gamers.
Right.
And just for the people who are PC gamers out in the world, I get it. I know true hardcore gamers only go PC. But I mean, I think we have to kind of lump the console into that end of the scale. It's not in the middle, you know, it's not over by Facebook and those farm games and stuff. Yeah. It's over at the PC side.
Huh. Maybe we should call them prosumers and pro gamers.
Yeah. Right.
Cause that's what
hardcore
you're saying.
Hardcore is a tough word. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what to call it. Like, it's like real gamers, you know,
We're real gamers.
Careful with that one.
Yeah.
I know. So my wife plays a game called Word. I think it's Words with Friends or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Great I think game. Literally every single day.
Yeah. So does my
wife. I don't believe my wife would ever consider herself to be a gamer.
No. Neither.
That's not part of her identity. And so I think however you have a name for it, I guess, but whatever you want to call that, the difference between my wife and
those are called casual gamers. I mean, that's the term the industry uses.
Maybe just gamers versus casual gamers, however you want to say it.
Yeah, gamer sounds serious. Gamer sounds like Gamergate, like you really
care.
You a
gamer?
Yeah.
I am a gamer. No, I'm a gamer.
You're a gamer. Oh, yeah, you're a gamer. Right. But gamers are always telling me, you're not a gamer. Because
no, but what they're really saying is you're not a hardcore gamer,
right?
Because you don't use a PC.
Well, I do, but I'm not hardcore enough for them. Yeah. Gamers are hardcore. You would qualify. It kind of comes down to the hours spent, the prestige level, whether you complete a game. So I'm casual. Mm-hmm. I'm a gamer, but I'm a casual gamer. Mm-hmm. But I'm a gamer. Casual.
You understand the problem.
You have a gamer
I own a PlayStation. I own an Xbox. Yeah. I own several. Yeah. I own a gaming PC, but I don't spend hours a day playing games. So that disqualifies me in those people's minds.
I don't know. You still paid for the hardware.
Well,
yeah,
I buy a lot of hardware. I don't know.
A lot of people buy into things, Mary Jo. That just makes I'm not well.
I bought a Porsche. It doesn't make me a race car driver.
Exactly.
Actually, I didn't buy a Porsche, but you get the idea.
Anywho, I guess my central point is unchanged, which is just
they're getting out of these consumer-y businesses.
I think they're literally out. I think they're already out.
Yeah.
There's a little stragglers here and there. Cortana is actually a much better example, but movies and TV is part of that as well. This is not a foundation for a set of consumer services, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're killing a music service, which to me is actually important and could have a wide audience. And you're introducing an e-book store?
Really? That was weird. Yeah. What's interesting is, of course, this is the month Apple completely became a consumer service company as opposed to a hardware company. I mean, this is they pivoted to consumer
services.
They
announced that, I mean, come on. We're going to be years down the road. Apple's still very much a hardware company. I mean, they're augmenting their revenues with services, but this News Plus thing, the only thing that's available, I think it's terrible.
It is terrible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it is completely misunderstood by almost everybody. Just today in the New York Times, there was a story about, you're spending $40 a month or whatever in the Wall Street Journal. You're spending $8 a month on the New Yorker. You're spending $10 a month on a couple of different magazines. Just spend $10 on Apple News Plus and you get it all. It's like you don't get any of that. You don't get any of that. Mm. They're curating individual articles. You could not pay for Apple News Plus and still get articles from the New York Times and that thing, by the way.
Right.
I know that because I do. It's this. And by the way, aside from the whole nobody really reads anymore kind of thing, and by reads, I mean reads long-form magazine articles, newspaper articles, or books. I mean, I do, but
they should have named it TLDR Plus.
Yeah. Right. Right.
No, it's true. I skim. I read magazines like I play games.
Yeah. No, most people do. I do, too.
Who has time?
I literally, over the past year, I did this as an experiment. Two long books just to see if I could do it. And both of them were books I had read multiple times so that I could drift off if I had to and I'd be fine. I just wanted to see if I could plow through these things because I'm so used to the little, CNN Headline News started this probably, the little 30-minute news cycle thing.
Yeah.
Where all we read a little blips.
All blips, news blips.
I think it's breaking our minds.
Yeah. Our minds are broken. It's true.
Yeah.
That's why we do, we keep our podcast down to 2 hours.
That's right. And even then, I'm sure there are people like, man.
Oh, nobody listens to them. Yeah. There's a couple of things they do. They speed them up to like two or three times.
Yeah.
So the funny thing is when those people come into the studio to watch, they go, you all sound drunk. Because from their point
like
of view,
Duck.
We're talking like this. And then there's the people who spread like a Windows Weekly. And I think this is a majority over four or five days. They listen to the whole thing, but it's four or five shows in effect.
Mm-hmm. That's how I listen to podcasts.
Yeah,
I listen
most people do. You listen when you're in the car in little chunks.
Yep.
That makes perfect sense, frankly.
So this chunk was probably terrible, and I apologize for that. Yeah, but
tune in tomorrow for a better chunk. Chunk three will be fabulous.
Chunk three is unbelievable.
Before we do chunk three, though, let's do advertiser one. And this is a new one and a really exciting one. If you're an IT type person, maybe you already have heard of Pulseway. It is so cool. It's a IT management software that you can hold in the palm of your hand. I mean, imagine controlling the entire IT environment. Everything from resetting a user's password to killing a process is slowing down a server. And you could do it while you're walking around on your phone with Pulseway. It's so cool. Pulseway lets you monitor, manage, and control Windows, Linux, and Mac systems from anywhere using any device, including your smartphone. You actually can use it on a computer, so you might have it on your desktop. And then as you leave, you know, you open the app, you can see real-time status, system resources, logged-in users. This is an ops dream. You could view network performance, Windows updates. If you can see how your IIS server is running, how your SQL server is running, Exchange, Active Directory. You can monitor VMware, Hyper-V. Any device that's SNMP enabled, you bet it's on there. You're in control. You can react to issues right away. You can, the boss can call you. You could say, let me check, at the mall. You could fix problems on the go. You can run commands in terminal. You can manage running processes. You can restart services. You can apply critical updates. You can restart systems. I'm going to get this for my home network, for crying out loud. This is awesome. Automate everything by creating and deploying custom scripts to automate all your IT tasks. You know, that's the saying. If it takes more than 30 seconds to do it, automate it. If you do it more than once, automate it. And this makes it really easy. You can automate anything from backup jobs to security checks on schedule or on demand at any time from any device, the device wherever you've got it, right? Patch management, throw that in. You can scan, install, and update your systems on the go. You can do it on demand or schedule it to be executed at a particular date. You've got remote desktop control, so you can connect to a computer like you're sitting in front of it, open without opening any ports or creating any firewalls or rules or, you know, no port forwarding. It's remote desktop control. You could switch between screens, send keystrokes, control the mouse. I mean, it's got everything you would want in this. It's called Pulseway. Pulseway. It's actually really popular. Maybe you have heard of it, but now you can try it free for 2 weeks on us. Go to pulseway.com/twit, P-U-L-S-E, like heartbeat, like pulse, way, W-A-Y, pulseway.com/twit. Be an IT hero. You don't even have to tell them how you did it.
Yeah, I'm pretty good, aren't I?
It's magic. Learn how thousands of organizations and sysadmins are making their IT environment more efficient, more secure. Pulseway.com/twit. Try it free for 2 weeks. We thank them for their support. And we thank you for supporting Windows Weekly by going to that address, pulseway.com/twit. Really cool. On with the show we go. Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott, and item number three, ebooks. We got like an hour out of ebooks. I love that.
I could spend an hour
based on
just
how many tweets we got yesterday.
It's a big story.
I feel justified.
Okay, good. I thought when I read it and I saw everybody making a big deal out of it, I thought, well, who even bought book? But okay, yeah, got it.
Sure. Oh, we heard from every one of those guys.
We did.
Every one of them. Yeah. Let's talk hardware. Microsoft is in the hardware business. That's a new. What's funny is, that's a new business for Microsoft, and yet I think now they're nicely established in it, right?
Yeah, and you know it's funny. When I think about Surface Book 2, in my head, this thing just launched last fall. But in real life, it launched like a year ago last fall, right? Like,
yeah, isn't that amazing?
Surface Book 2 has been around for a long time.
Yeah, that's like the new one.
Yeah. So, but that's, you know, Microsoft is kind of on the Apple schedule when it comes to hardware. So, Surface Book 2, when it launched, had multiple configurations. It was the first version that had both 15 and 13.5-inch devices. For all of them, except for the base model 13.5-inch, what you got was a quad-core 8th-generation Core i7 processor. And then from there, you could spec it out depending on the machine with, RAM, storage. And actually, that's it. And then The non-base models of both versions came with some kind of dedicated NVIDIA GPU, a DGPU. I think it was 1050 on the 13.5 and a 1060 on the 15, but that's not super important. The confusing thing was the base model, which was $1,500 back then, was a dual-core, 7th-gen Core i5, not a quad-core, 8th-gen Core i5. It was just a curiosity at the time. And flash forward a year and a half, and they haven't replaced that that dual-core Core i5. But what two things have happened. One is they've introduced a new base model, which is basically the same machine but with less storage for less money. It's often on sale for as little as, I want to say, $1,150. Maybe it was $1,250. But it's less expensive. And so like with the other Surface devices, Microsoft has made it a little easier to get in on the lower end, right? They're lowering the price by introducing lower end versions. And then this past week, they introduced, I'll call it a mid-level version. It's a 13.5-inch version. It's a Core i5. So it's the third Core i5 model, but it's an 8th-gen quad-core Core i5, not a 7th-gen dual-core Core i5. Costs $1,500. So if you're confused, you're listening. So there's absolutely no way I can explain this that it will make sense to you. But they've added this version. I don't quite know why. I think what it's going to do eventually is replace what used to be the base model, which is basically the same configuration, just 7th-gen versus 8th-gen. That previous model is on sale right now, I think, for $1,250. So if the core thing doesn't bug you, integrated graphics is not a problem. You can save $250 and get the old one. I think when that sells out, it's going to go away. Why did they do this? I have no idea. Why did they do this now? I have no idea. What does this mean for Surface Book 3? I have no idea. It is unlikely we will see a Surface Book 3 before the end of this year. And so this will be in market for at least 6 months, possibly longer. Who knows?
I don't think you're expecting a Surface Book 3 before the end of the year.
No. I didn't mean to suggest that. But I mean, it's interesting that they're like adding a model at this point is very strange, unusual.
I feel like they did that before, though, no? With other variants?
Yeah, they have. But usually, like I said, like the past year, typically what they've been doing is adding a new base model. So the previous Surface Book base model came with 256 gigs of storage. So they released a version that had 128. And I might be getting the exact price wrong, but like I said, I believe you can get it right now for $1,150. So that's the new starting price. So the big difference, just looking at Surface Book 2 by itself, between today and 18 months ago, is that the base price to get into this product is $1,150 versus $1,500. That's a significant reduction. Yeah. It's not the same computer, but it's not a Core M or whatever. So that's kind of interesting. You know, Surface Book 2 replaced Surface Book 1. Surface Laptop 2 replaced Surface Laptop 1. But in the Surface Laptop time frame, they introduced a new base model. That version is available again in Surface Laptop 2. Surface Pro, same thing, going from 5 to 6. They've lowered the entry-level price in each case. And, of course, last year they also introduced Surface Go, which is a relatively inexpensive product, especially compared to the other Surface devices. So, you know, they had a $1.86 billion quarter over the Christmas holiday because all of a sudden, if you look at their ASP, I don't know what it is exactly, but it probably went from $1,500 down to as low as $1,000 or something. I mean, they significantly lowered the average selling price of Surface devices over the past year by introducing these new models. So, interesting.
Yeah.
Confusing, for sure.
I feel like it's a good move, though, because I feel like one of the criticisms of Surface devices is the price. Especially because you have to add the keyboard, the pen, right? And if they're targeting education with some of these, they need lower end entry level models.
Yeah. And like I said, I think the big thing is you can see the impact. There's math here that I can't do, but you know, and Apple does it with their iPhone prices too as well. When you think about it, it's okay, we're gonna adjust the price in some direction. Right. How's that going to impact unit sales? And where's the sweet spot for revenues, right? And so Microsoft had been sitting at about $1 billion in revenues, plus or minus some small amount, for several quarters before that quarter. And then it suddenly jumped up to like 1.86, if I get that correct. Big jump, you know. And I think it was directly attributable to entry-level models across the product lines and then Surface Go.
It's all because of their AI, Paul. They now have even more AI-ified telemetry.
AI pricing.
So they know
pricing by
how
AI.
To, you know, like airline seats, when they know exactly when to stop selling the cheap seats and when they can
Someone
jack
at Microsoft
the price
probably said, hey, Cortana, what's the best entry-level price for a Surface Book 2? $1,150. All right.
There we go.
How do we get there?
Yeah. How? But they have to do it by reducing the cost to themselves, right? They're not reducing their margins.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, Microsoft doesn't take advantage of the same, you know, PC component price cuts that other PC makers get, right? Because they don't sell so many. That might explain the seventh gen part here in the base versions. It absolutely explains the Pentium Gold that's in the Surface Go. I mean, you know, you're trying to hit a price point. You have to do what you can do. Obviously, when you continue a product line like this for this long, you are taking advantage of the natural lowering of price that occurs using the same components over time. It's not like they've upgraded the SSDs or anything. I mean, it's the same stuff they've always had, which is great. I mean, it's not bad. It's all good stuff. But it has, you know, it's been a year and a half. So, I mean, a lot of PC makers, I mean, a lot, if you think about it, Surface Book 2 is a work class and a workstation class product. Why is there not a hexa-core, ninth gen, Core i7, you know, whatever advanced graphics? Because it's Microsoft, you know, that they move a little more slowly than that.
Yeah, that's what that extreme Lenovo that I just got is.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, can I ask a crazy question? But who do you, who do you think buys computers these days?
Awesome people,
Joe. No, seriously.
Well, prosumers,
is there still
right?
a market for computers?
Yeah, and we know that that
outside
market
of
is
business.
Approximately...
Outside of business.
Oh, outside of business. No, there's no business.
business, by the way, doesn't buy new ones very often.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's not like we think every year, oh, is it time to buy new computers?
Right.
We don't think that. We're a small business, but we don't think that. We look, somebody says, you know, this is 5 years old, and I say, oh, well, I guess we should get you a new one. That's kind of... And I guess if it's a big business, then they probably, after 4 or 5 years, say, okay, we're going to refresh those.
Right. I don't know that we ever see data that breaks down accurately PC sales between businesses and consumers. Depending on who you talk to, I suspect what you'll find is that people believe it's either split roughly 50-50 or is a 2/3 majority going to business, something like that. I bet it's somewhere in there. The problem for PCs, of course, is that there are simpler devices now, right? And so I think that impacts consumers more than businesses, honestly, but it probably impacts both. And so a lot of people will use phones. Some people use iPads or tablets.
Yeah, I bet most people's kind of basic needs for computing are handled by their phone. And since they have to have the smartphone.
For sure.
I bet you that most people are saying, well, I'm spending $800, $1,000 on a smartphone. Mm-hmm. I don't really need another PC, a laptop, a desktop. But why would I get one of those?
Yeah, so that's a good point and that's actually why a Chromebook makes a lot of sense. The device you're going to use every single day is the one you spend the most money on. The device you only need occasionally because you need a keyboard and a big screen is the one you spend less on, if you're a typical person.
Normal person actually
buys these computers, right? So, normal person. Nobody normal is buying a Surface Book 2, right? So Surface Book 2 is a specialty device. It's sort of a portable workstation. It's aimed at prosumers and professionals, business users, developers, engineers, you know, scientists, you know, people have need of these things. Artists, you know, fall into this category for sure with the pen capabilities and multi-touch and so forth. And this is lower unit sales, higher margins, profitable type of business. It certainly is for Apple, maybe less so for Microsoft, but the premium PC space is profitable overall. It's where all of the growth is. And premium PC sales include gaming PC sales, right? Which are also tend to be very high-end and very expensive.
I'm going to go out on a limb, but I have to think this is vestigial sales. Could be, honestly, yeah. Don't think. Yeah. I think 5 years from now, owning a PC will be kind of like owning a stereo. It's just not. It's not something people need anymore.
I think of it as like when you see pickup trucks out in the world, right? If you were, for some reason, pickup trucks have had an interesting crossover with just normal people. Or you'll see someone in a giant SUV just driving it by themselves that doesn't have like seven kids in the back, like the Partridge Family or whatever. If you were to actually look at like who in the world actually needs a pickup truck for work every single day, it's probably some tiny percentage of the whole user base, but they're still needed. So the thing we always look for in the PC space is like, where's the cliff? Like when does it end? And the thing is, it went from, I think it was like 365 million units a year in 2011 to wherever it is today. I think it's like 214, something like that. The last 2 years, the sales drop off has slowed to almost nothing. And so depending on whose numbers you believe, last year PC sales were even with the year before. So we've kind of reverse plateaued, if that makes sense. Doesn't mean they're not going to fall in the future for sure. And Chromebooks are probably included in this figure too. And you know, arguably they're a type of PC, and Macs, you know, obviously. I don't know. I mean, if it's a couple of hundred million units a year, it's not horrible. I mean, it's horrible compared to what it was, but it's still a pretty big business. It's not the 1.3 to 1.5 billion that the smartphone market saw or sees. You're right. But
I just wonder why people are buying them. What are they doing with them? I mean, I guess a student needs one.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. So
yeah.
Students, for sure. And you know, professionals too, who
take
not
work
just professional.
Home.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to do that.
No,
it's not. Who does,
but. No, that's, by the way, that's actually
sadly,
the bigger
happens.
Problem. It's the engaged user base thing. That's it. You know, so.
I think
you
this
know,
is
Microsoft.
What Apple's saying, and they're saying it tacitly because they still make
sure.
computers, but they don't care about computers anymore. It's pretty clear. And I think they're phasing them out.
I listen, the many times that they've tried to fix that keyboard, show me that they do care, Leo.
Oh, man. I mean, the developers need, I mean, people who work with them
developers.
Need them, obviously. People who do spreadsheets,
right.
Our
but
bookkeepers use them.
Small,
but I'm talking about families. I'm talking about normal people. Mom is a, I don't know, works at a library. Dad is a plumber. The
sure.
kids are in eighth grade. They probably use iPads for schoolwork or Chromebooks.
Well,
and there's a computer. I guarantee you that house has a computer. And it's being used less and less and less.
Last night, for example, my wife and I were looking at some kind of travel thing on our phones like idiots. And then finally
That's
I
no
said.
No fun either. I agree.
Yeah. It's the worst. I was like, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to get my computer. I need this screen. Now I'm 50 something years old, whatever. I get that. But, you know, older people obviously who came up in the world when PCs were everything still tend to do everything on PCs. And so when we talk about, and one of you know
well,
the tip thing
I mean, it's vestigial.
About.
It's like
it is vestigial.
It's taking
for sure,
a while to wear off. Just like
I think
physical media is vestigial. People still buy books, records.
Yeah,
but
no,
it's kind of vestigial.
Well, but you just mentioned students, for example. It's like the case for students needing these things is something I think that will persist for a while. That may change over time, but I mean we still require people to sit in front of a large screen and type. Long form things, you know, and when that goes away, and given the rise of emoji and whatnot, it probably is going away. Maybe that will be less of a need. I don't know, but
yeah. I think the type of PC that people will need will change, right? Like that's why Microsoft's going after first line workers all the time because they're like, there's going to be people who need a
well, it's why they're going after Chromebook
with a
too.
Screen. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The central genius of Chromebook is the understanding that this is the secondary device, not, you know, that the need for a full size keyboard and a bigger screen is occasional. It's not the full time thing. Whereas in the PC world, it was always the big thing. And, you know, Windows grew up out of that world. It's got strata of improvements all over it and it's a mess, but it's complicated, battery issues, et cetera. So, you know, Microsoft is working toward that as well. So I think in the short term, you see growth in the premium PC space. What Microsoft needs to do is create growth in the low end space because, frankly, it's that equation we said earlier. Yeah. You know, you spent the most money on the device you use the most, phone, and you're going to use for 3 years, maybe.
Yeah.
And you spend the least on the computer because, you know, sometimes you need to print or you need to big screen. Like I said, you need the keyboard, you know, just occasional.
That's so funny because the chat room is going, oh, no, no, we need it. We need it. But honestly.
Yeah, but you're listening to this podcast.
What worse, you're in IRC. Yeah. you're using a 50-year-old internet technology that's text on a black screen. I mean, of course you need a computer.
It's going to.
You're not
typical. It's going to happen in fits and starts. It's, you know, remember when the iPad first came out, it was going to revolutionize publishing, right? Yeah. We're going to have all these interactive magazines and blah, blah. And we were entering the post-PC world.
People stopped reading. That's what happened.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, things will change. I mean, eventually it might make sense for someone to carry an iPad to school or some tablet thing, you know, whatever. Microsoft hopes that that thing they carry is a computer, you know, a tablet computer running, you know, Lite OS or something or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, we'll see. This is something I follow very closely. I'm very concerned about the PC space and... I'll just say that, you know, PC sales fell for 7 years in a row. There's no getting around that. But the last two of those years, it was almost flat. The last year of that, it was basically flat. So we seem to have found our new level, our new normal or whatever.
Yeah. I can see why a company like Microsoft would kind of think about what it's doing and start thinking about what the future is going to look like.
Yeah.
Well, but my example from last night, I went to the computer, not because I'm a writer and I need that thing, but because I needed the bigger screen. I mean, it may work out for my daughter or somebody that, you know, when they want the bigger screen to do research with their husband or wife or something, they're going to use their phone to broadcast onto the wall or the TV or something. And that's the bigger screen. And, you know, things will definitely change.
But. It's funny. Your example, Lisa and I were looking at cruise trips. Mm-hmm. I had it on my laptop, so I just put it on the big screen.
Yeah, so she could see it.
We sat there on the giant screen, and we were looking. You know, she was
–
it was a very natural way to do it. Mm-hmm. And I played back videos from the – you know, and we were looking at pictures. I mean, it was a very natural way to do it. Somebody had to control it. And I agree that a lot of times you're using a small screen or a phone. It's not the optimal experience.
Yeah.
Right.
But, geez, it feels like keyboards are really 19th century technology.
Sure.
They are. Oh.
For sure.
Oh, they are. So.
I love my keyboard. I'm not giving it up.
You're a writer. Every writer is going to have something like that. Nobody's. Do you think people will dictate? I think it's very hard to dictate writing.
Yeah, it doesn't work, really.
You can do work. It. I always thought that was going to be my future. In fact, in the as long ago as probably the late 1990s, I started experiencing the first kind of carpal tunnel type issues in the back of my hand. And I thought, this is it.
Yep.
I'm going to be talking into some IBM software and it's going to be splatting it out into Word or whatever. And I find that to be incredibly
painful
to do.
I think it's worse than that. I think the part of the brain that does speech is different than the part of the brain that does writing.
Too.
And so you can't actually do it.
Right.
I can't even dictate messages on my phone to like send an email to somebody.
Yeah.
You're right. And again, this might be specific to writing, but there are little blocks that occur. There's a reason we have a writer's block kind of phrase for this. But I even find like I can hop into like literally into a video game and your mind just goes somewhere else. And then you're like, I got it. And then I stop and I turn. And it's like, there I go. And what I need is just some kind of a mental break. Because if you can sit there and stare at it and you're never going to get it.
Yeah.
And if you're just talking out loud, what kind of babbling? You remember back in the day people would talk, note to self, I have an awesome idea for a book. You know, that's cute.
It was always a joke.
Can you imagine? Yeah, but can you imagine how horrible it would be to listen to your own recordings like that?
Yeah.
You would only do it once. Yeah.
And I think people who dictate books aren't really writing. They're they're talking.
Right.
I mean, we talk. I talk. That's what I do for a living. But it's not the same as writing.
It's like
you transcribe. When you read a transcription of a podcast, people sound moronic.
Yeah.
Right?
Leo, people would argue if they listen to the recording of our podcast.
Any transcription. You read a transcript of Meet the Press, people sound more like morons.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's just because we're speech is different than writing.
There's a reason most autobiographies have a co-author, right?
Yeah, because somebody's got to write person, that crap.
Someone's telling the story.
As told to
yes.
an actual writer.
And then someone's turning it into something they can read.
Yeah.
Well.
As yeah. told to somebody who can write.
Right.
Let's take a little break. Speaking of writing, I put all my writing at WordPress.com. I'm going to write up. I was talking earlier about the new PC I'm getting, and I'm trying to automate the setup with PowerShell and Chocolaty and stuff, and I think I'm going to write this up. I want to write this up for my blog at leolaporte.com. There are times when you do need to write, but there are also times when you want to share photos. There are times when you want to share your life tale. And, of course, people say, well, that's okay. I put it on Facebook. Oh, imagine if I put 1,000-word article about how I set up my PC on Facebook. Oh, yeah, that's good. That'll get shared. All right, worse. I see people do this on Twitter. No, if you're going to do it, you put a link on Twitter to your website. You put a link on Facebook to your website. If you're a business, you need a website. The website, your website is your home on the net. It's yours. You own it. It's your property. No one can kick you out. You could put your best stuff there. It's the thing you want people to find when they Google your name. And it's so funny because there's so many people who have no presence on the internet. You Google their name, what you find is basically a bunch of pages saying, well, we can get their police record if you want it. It's like, even if you have no police record, that's what people find. If you're a teenager these days and you don't have a website, people Google your name, they're going to find the video of the brawl that you were part of 3 years ago in seventh grade or something. I mean, it's not, you need to control this. You need to put your best stuff up on the web. If you're a business, you need to tell people your hours, your costs. You need to make posts about your business. This is an opportunity. And I'm saying all this as a preface to the fact that you need to do this at WordPress.com. And I'm a big believer in that. For 12 years, I've been using WordPress.com. In fact, when I was starting blogging in the early 2000s, I tried a bunch of stuff. Then Matt Mullenweg came up with WordPress in like 2002 or 3. And man, I glommed onto that and never left. WordPress.com makes it easy because they do the hosting. They do the security patches. They do the updates. They have great, powerful site building tools you don't need to be a geek to use. They're very straightforward. Thousands of themes. And if you ever have a question, you've got support 24/7 from not some notebook reading guy, but actual WordPress enthusiasts. That's what I love about it. All their tech support comes from WordPress experts. WordPress.com lets you pursue whatever it is you love by launching a site that's free to start with room to grow. That's why WordPress exists. It was started so anyone can publish their ideas, their pictures, their videos, their music, their text. You can upload it all there. They'll host it all. You can download it anytime you want it back. And WordPress.com has no two-week trials, no hidden fees, and you own your own content forever. And I think that's what the net is all about. WordPress.com is built to grow with you and get you where you want to be tomorrow. I started with the free tier. Actually, I started self-hosting it. Then I did the free tier at WordPress.com. Now I'm actually on the business plan, which is a little more money, but I've got a lot of nice plugins and stuff I can use. I love WordPress. So flexible, so powerful. Some of the biggest publications in the world use it to build their websites. Fortune.com, Quartz. Millions of people use WordPress.com every day to turn their dreams into reality. In fact, so many people use WordPress. Now, 1/3 of all the internet is powered by WordPress. 33% globally. That number blows my mind. Nicely done, Matt. WordPress.com. Here's what you can do. Go to WordPress.com/windows. We'll set you up for 15% off on your new site. And that's fantastic. That's a fantastic deal. WordPress.com/windows. Buy a whole year subscription. That's a big savings. WordPress.com/windows. 15% off your new website. We thank you, WordPress, for doing such a great job for so many years. I thank you, WordPress.com, for hosting my site and Steve Gibson's site and everybody I know's site. And honestly, if you want to show your appreciation to Paul and Mary Jo and Windows Weekly, use that URL. You'll get 15% off and they'll get credit. WordPress.com/windows. All right. Moving on. Oh, actually, he's talking about the future of computing. HoloLens. Big, big. What do they call that now? Not sale. Partnership.
Partners.
Yes. Partners.
Another partnership.
They're partnering with Canada.
Oh, Canada.
Actually, so I call it America Light.
This is pretty cool, but it shows you something because wasn't there a big furor about using HoloLens in the U.S. military?
Right,
right.
There was
a petition and stuff. I guess there's. I didn't know. I don't think they stopped. Right. Nadella said no. Sure. We're going to do it anyway. No.
Pretty sure that Canada doesn't routinely bomb other countries. So
there is not. I doubt there's a petition saying please don't use HoloLens with the Royal Canadian Navy. Please.
They're probably. Probably a responsible organization, I would imagine.
Well, plus, how are they using it? They're using it for maintenance, right?
Actually, the reason I wrote about this, honestly, is because, you know, when we talk, remember I was a little overly exuberant about HoloLens too recently. Well, this is a great example of, obviously, in this case, the Royal Canadian Navy has their own IT department, and they have, you know, whatever services they provide and so on and so forth. This is a great example of how HoloLens gets into companies like this, right? This is not a special use case. It's the normal use case, honestly, for HoloLens. Remote assistance, in this case for mechanical issues and so forth. The ability to have someone on site on a boat, an active duty boat, put a HoloLens on so that someone who knows about the system he's looking at, it's a mechanical system, can help him and figure out what's going on. And they're test marketing some software, which is the real reason or the real thing about the story. But the HoloLens thing is what's interesting to me. And just the normalcy of this usage, right? It's not NASA's going to Mars. You know, it's like we could all learn from this, you know, kind of thing. Yep. Or we could all use this software. I think what they're doing is very much along the lines of what they were showing off at the HoloLens 2 launch. A lot of hellos in there.
and what Lorraine was talking about on Windows Weekly too, right?
Yep. Yeah, so I thought this was kind of interesting. Basically because the organization is interesting. There's no doubt about that. But the way they're using it is like, yeah, cool. They're not trying to remotely target, you know, bomb sites or whatever. I mean, it's like at least not with this.
They're going to fix a diesel generator.
Yeah, right. Right, because you're out at sea.
Yeah.
I mean, what happens when something goes wrong and you're nowhere near a port, but the expert who knows how to fix the system is back home?
Yeah.
Right? This is a great use for this thing.
Perfect sense.
Now, if you were in a submarine, you wouldn't have internet connectivity. That's a whole different ballgame. But
you couldn't play your Xbox either. So
that's right. Yeah, you're screwed. You just can't do anything.
You got to work.
Yep. Yeah. You play Spotify offline. That's what you got.
Okay. Now I have a question because I think I know my answer to this question. But on my new ThinkPad X1 Extreme, mostly I got it for programming. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of installing Visual Studio, and I see the new one just came out. But actually, I think VS Code is what I want.
Yeah, I thought you were going to ask, was VS Code also revved? And I actually don't know that. I'm not sure.
I don't think it was.
It's a completely different code base. In fact, they should.
No, I know that. But
it's like Java and JavaScript. They shouldn't use the same names. They're different products entirely.
Yep. So I don't see any reason why you couldn't have both of these on the system at the same time. Yep. Visual Studio 2019 community is free.
I downloaded it, but then I looked at it. Well, first of all, my mistake was I put it on the Mac, and it's not even Visual Studio on the Mac. It's Xamarin.
It's Xamarin Studio, that's right.
Xamarin Studio that they call Julio.
No, we don't say it that way anymore. What we say is it's the best of Visual Studio on the Mac.
But really, Visual Studio is .NET development primarily, right? That's actually not what I'm going to be doing. VS Code, though, has plugins for everything I am doing, like Clojure and Haskell.
It's
really like it. Yeah.
I don't think you need Visual Studio.
No, I don't think. I think I'm going to hold off unless I could. The one thing I was thinking of doing, TypeScript and F Sharp, and of course it'd be great for those because those are both
Microsoft. You know what this is the PC conversation, right?
It is.
Not that many people need PCs, but those who do really need them. That's Visual Studio.
Yeah.
And then for the broader use case for developers, you need something lightweight that has plugin support like Visual Studio Code, which is universally loved. I mean, it's even people who can't stand Microsoft would agree. This is an incredible program. And it's probably, It's interesting because it will probably proliferate a lot more over time than the full Visual Studio does.
Mm-hmm.
Across platform.
Yep.
You know, I use it. I just kind of play around with it, but I goof around with the Flutter stuff, and you know, you basically install a single plugin. It's all set up, creates Flutter projects. They blast them out to an emulator. You can go out to a physical device if it's connected to your, you know, to the computer. It's great.
Yeah, pretty neat.
Oh, that was.
But if you do want Visual Studio,
it's
the
new
one is out.
It's new.
That's true.
Do they update it every year? I guess they do, don't they?
No. The last one was 2017.
Oh,
so
wow.
This is 2019.
Oh, that's a big jump.
It's probably on an 18th month ish, maybe yeah. 2 years.
I mean, you get updates all year long. I mean, it's not like you don't always get updates.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. But there's a couple things to talk about, like Visual Studio Live Share, which is their like pair programming
really
kind of
cool.
service.
I really
it's
like
built
that.
In now.
Oh,
built
nice.
Into the product. Yep. And also they did a lot of work around making it easier to start projects and jump into your code, because people always would complain how long it took. Like, oh, I can't get to my code. Right.
Well, if you want to feel better about that, just run Android Studio once and then you'll realize that Visual Studio is a million times better.
Yeah. There's other smaller things. And then they did some revs to Visual Studio 2019 for the Mac. As we said, that's actually Xamarin Studio that they call Visual Studio. But new start window, new C# editor, a couple things in there too.
I'm actually going to, I mean, to be honest with you, could be using Emacs and WSL. But, you know, I just, you know, I thought I'd pretend to be. No, I love, actually, I put VS Code on my Mac too. I really love it.
Yeah.
It's a nice, very nice.
Yeah, VS Code's great.
It's an editor, not an IDE. It's a basic editor.
Now, it is, but the plugin support,
it's really good
to me, is what elevates it, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Like I said, you can create, you know, like Flutter projects. It's fully supported. Like it's, I don't know.
It's great for Clojure, which is a Lisp, as you know, got all the paredit stuff. And so, does Mehdi use? What does he do? Because he uses
a Mac, Leo. So
does he really?
Yeah,
he does.
He wrote Tweetin' on a Mac. No.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Now, how did he do this cross-platform thing? It's not going to be from Xcode, so I'm not 100. I should ask him that.
He's
actually, he might have written
VS Code.
Let's see. He must have written about this.
He says, I frequently use a feature on Visual Studio Code to help friends debug their code. He's talking about the share. So now Live Share is available in Visual Studio as well.
Yeah, he thought that was a big enough deal that he wrote it as a separate post, but I'm trying to. He wrote an article about how he wrote
VS Code. That's interesting.
Yeah, but he didn't write Tweetin' in VS Code, right? So
isn't Tweetin' a PW or a WPA app?
Yeah,
no, so
it's a store app, right?
It is a web. Yeah, but he put it in the store. So it's built on Electron.
Oh, okay. As is VS Code, by the way.
Yep. All the CSS. A lot of CSS.
Yeah, so yeah, you could do that across platform.
I guess you could do it in code, sure. Yeah, but I don't think he did. That's the question. I'm just wondering if he writes anything about.
He used Notepad.
Oh.
Yeah, he used
Nice.
He used an Electron Windows Store to package Tweetin' into an APX, which could be submitted to the Windows, the Microsoft Store, rather.
I was thinking about installing Notepad++ because I use BBEdit on the Mac. I like having a plain text editor, but VS Code is so good. I probably need it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like what they've
done. He never mentions Xcode. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure he doesn't use Xcode. If he did, there'd be a Tweetin' for the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Huh, I had no idea he did that. Tweetin', which we, I guess he's not doing it anymore, but we loved as a store app for a Twitter.
Should just ask him.
It's really good.
Where? Mehdi, buddy.
Hey, Mehdi. Hey, Mehdi. What's going on, Mehdi?
Sorry, let's see if he answers this.
Tweetin', though, is not even a UWP app, right?
Oh, it's not. I thought it was.
I think it's in the store, but I don't think it's UWP, right?
Yeah, it's probably the old web app format. That's packaged as an API. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Actually, he's already written back. IntelliJ for Java. That's the editor that Android Studio is based on.
Yep.
Mostly. Oh, actually, it says mostly VS Code.
Yep. Mm. He's a smart man, that Mehdi.
He is.
He is indeed. And now writing for Therot.com. So I'll tell you what, I have one more ad to do, but instead of I just did an ad, so let's do your tips and picks, Paul, and then we'll break before Mary Jo's stuff.
Okay. I kind of combined my tips and picks into each other. So just as a reminder, because it is a new month, there's a new round of games with gold, as I mentioned, every month. And so the two games that are available now are Technomancer for Xbox One and Star Wars Battlefront 2 for Xbox. Actually, that's an original Xbox game, so that's available through backward compatibility on Xbox One. That's interesting. That might only be the second time they've done that in Games with Gold. I didn't even realize that was original Xbox, but there it is. And then this is kind of random. I just added this at the last second, but Microsoft is having a game sale on horror games. So they're calling it the Unhalloween Horror Spectacular. So you don't already have
it's Halloween in April.
Yeah. Friday the 13th, the game, or Dead by Daylight, et cetera. So a bunch of those games are up to 75% off, including Friday the 13th. If you're into that kind of thing. And then my third game and Xbox-related thing is Call of Duty has a Battle Royale mode called Blackout. And I had made the observation probably a year or so ago, back when we were talking about PUBG, that Call of Duty, like, or Battle Royale is something like Call of Duty could easily do. There's so many different game modes in multiplayer. It's like, instead of making a whole game for Battle Royale, they could just make a game mode. And so they did do that with the latest Call of Duty game, Black Ops 4. But, of course, the part of the success of Battle Royale games is that they're free, right? So to get Blackout, you have to pay $60 to get the latest Call of Duty game. So what they're doing is, for the month of April, anyone can play Blackout for free. And this is across platforms, I believe, but let's just keep to the Xbox part of this equation. So you'll be able to download this from the store. You can play it for free. They've actually just introduced a new map, which is based on Alcatraz, right? The prison, island prison.
I thought I recognized that.
Yeah. Which is really, it's a cool environment. Like, that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
And so you can kind of get into it.
The problem is you're on an island. It's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's perfect. It's, in fact, it's way better than those gigantic maps that usually.
Too big. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, this would be a great map just for normal multiplayer.
Are there zombies in here too?
Must be zombie. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Battle Royale look at, with zombies?
Know? Yeah.
You had me at Alcatraz.
I know. It's kind of interesting. So, and then the other thing is, I think we talked about this whenever Microsoft announced it a couple of weeks ago. Microsoft announced that they were removing the ability to stream music from OneDrive to Groove, which is one of the few remaining things that Groove does anymore, right? And so what's left is, if you have music on your computer, you can manage it through Groove. It's weird to me. Like, Groove is, to me, the best UWP app that's ever been made. It's, like, full-featured. It's good-looking. And it's dead. You know, they've killed it. So, but if you do have a local music collection, you can still use it for that. You can't stream from OneDrive anymore. Obviously, there's no music subscription service anymore. And I've been advising people to move on to something else if they want to do what I want to do, because this is a transitional thing, too. Like, as a generational deal, I grew up on music, like actual music, cassettes and LPs and then CDs eventually. I have a bunch of CD music that I've ripped to the computer in MP3 or AAC form or whatever. A lot of that music is not in the services. It's like live albums or just obscure music, whatever it is. And I like to mix and match my own songs with the songs from a service into playlists, right? So I used to do this with Groove. I can't do it with Groove anymore. There's only a couple of other services that allow this. Google Play Music is the best choice. That's the big tip here. It's what I use. You can upload 50,000 songs for free to Google Play Music and stream them to any device or download them to any device. You don't have to pay anything. You don't have to subscribe to anything. You can do that. But if you do want to subscribe, you can combine your own music with their music. It's great. If you're an Apple guy, Apple Music allows this. You can do that too. But, of course, Microsoft is promoting Spotify. Most people use Spotify. I've gotten a lot of requests, well, how do you do this on Spotify? And the answer is, you can do it. It's just a little ponderous. And so I wrote a story about this. But basically,
I'm glad you did, because I know you could do this, but I could never figure out how.
Yeah, it's not great. So basically what you have to do is, well, obviously have music on your computer, right? So wherever it is. Go into Spotify, turn on local music, the ability to see and play local music. Specify the location if you have to. I put mine is just in the music folder. Fine. Once you do that, you can add that. It will show up in Spotify. You can add it to playlists. You can mix and match with Spotify's music and your music. And then you go to, the deal is you don't really want it on your computer, right? You want it on your phone. So turn your phone on, same Wi-Fi network, open Spotify. That playlist will pop up. It will have the your songs in there too, and then you have to download them to the device. And once you do that, they're going to be on your phone. The playlist will be intact. You'll have your music. It's just a little ponderous because anytime you make a change to the playlist, you have to do it on the computer. You have to, you know, you have to go through this process again.
So
it's
you
a little
can't
ponderous.
Put your music in Spotify's cloud.
No, that's what they don't do.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. But if you have it on your computer, they'll copy it over the Wi-Fi network to the device. That's, and so it's kind of a, it's like Wi-Fi sync basically.
Right.
But you still have the cloud, you know, the music, their music is in the cloud and you can download that as well. But, you know, the idea here is you go into the gym or you're going, well, maybe you're on a plane, you're going to be offline. You want to listen to this playlist you made, and maybe that playlist has music that you own, that Spotify owns, and you want to mix and match. And so it works. It's just not, it's not as good as it is on Google or Apple, but it does work.
So I got all my rock sugar in there now. That's good.
Rock sugar is, for this middle-aged white man, the greatest music ever made.
And Def Leppard and Taylor Swift.
Yep.
That's a playlist. At least you got a little crew in there too.
That's right. That's right. I grew up in the 80s, by the way. That's
I didn't notice.
I don't know if that's
no idea. No idea at all. We were talking before the show. Had you ever made Chocolatey a pick?
So tell me if I'm wrong about this, because there are a lot of applications in Windows where you basically go through a checklist and you're like, I want these apps on the computer. But my understanding of Chocolatey is that it's just for basically developer type things, right?
No,
so it's for.
I mean, the idea, the goal here, and this is what I've been studying up before my computer comes tomorrow, is reproducible setups, right? Reproducible installs.
Yeah.
And with PowerShell, of course, you can do a lot of that. In fact, I'm gathering from a variety of sources all the time.
Yeah, but having a GUI front end to that would be pretty ideal.
Chocolatey has a GUI.
Yeah.
Chocolatey is intended to be a package manager. So on Linux, when you install Linux, say you install Ubuntu, then you have apt, which is the Ubuntu package manager.
What are the packages? What packages do they have for Windows, right? So aren't they mostly developer utilities? And
LastPass is on there. Chrome is on there. Firefox is on there.
Okay. So actually it is sort of
6,000 programs. So the idea is you can incorporate that into a PowerShell script, or which is what I'm going to do. And you can say, you know, Chocolatey install, and I've got 20 or 30 programs I'm going to have Chocolatey install unattended. Kind of like that thing. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. You download a list, and there's a very small list. Chocolatey's got more than 6,000 programs in there.
Okay.
And it's easy to make packages, so it's much more than just developers. I mean, it is a lot of developer stuff.
You know, the reason this is smart, just in case it's not clear to people, is that, you know, in the old days, you might make like a system image backup, right?
Right.
And then you can blast the whole thing back onto your computer, and there you go. But the problem is that thing sits there frozen in time. So it's actually better to...
Yeah,
this do a system reset.
Versions, right?
Yeah, you do a system reset of the OS, however you choose to do it. We talked about that earlier. There's many, many ways. But then you have this clean install of Windows, and then this thing will allow you to basically do a one-click install of a bunch of stuff, and it will always be the latest versions.
Right. So you go Choco install Google Chrome, and you're going to get Chrome.
Yeah, so you could make you don't make a script, I guess, but you would basically
you
make one as a script.
You command line, but you can make a script, and you can put this in PowerShell. There's Notepad Plus,
that's good.
VLC. I mean, there's certain things that I just always am going to want to have on my Windows machine, 7-zip. By the way, public service announcement, if you're using WinRAR, update it. Holy cow, we've been talking about this on Security Now for a couple of weeks now. There are lots of exploits in the wild for out-of-date WinRAR installations.
I used to be a huge WinRAR guy.
Do you use 7-Zip now? I've been trying to decide.
Yeah, with 7-Zip's the one.
Yeah. You can install Silverlight. Hey, good news.
It lives.
That one hasn't been updated in a while.
No. But there is a lot of stuff. And the idea that doing it in a batch file or a script so that you can automate that is great. Plus, once you've installed those, you go Chocolatey update.
Right.
Or upgrade, I should say, and it'll upgrade them all. That's the idea. Yeah. The real purpose for a package manager is it knows what you've installed, what versions you have, and you can, in one command, update everything you've installed with it. It's not just like Nine-Night. It's similar, though. It's similar.
Yeah, Nine-Night. That was one of the things. Yeah.
Package managers are kind of very popular.
For some reason, I thought this was something to do with like Linux-like utilities on Windows. I thought it was relegated
to... You know, PuTTY's in there. I mean...
Yeah.
You know. But so is Foxit Reader, right? So, right. You know, AdBlock Plus, Paint.net.
Atom, is that that's a developer?
Atom's an editor. Yeah, it's very much like a VS Code. It's a...
Right.
Yeah. Malwarebytes, Python. So, yeah, it's, you know, 6,000, they said 6,482 packages. It's free. It's open source. There's a professional paid version. But I was really... So you have to understand, the whole thing for me at this point is I've given up on Apple on Macs. They just, those keyboards, I'm sorry, and the price and everything. I like Linux. And in fact, one of the reasons I keep buying ThinkPads is because I know they'll run Linux just fine if I, you know, change my mind. But between WSL, things like Chocolaty, Docker, I feel like Windows can be as good an environment for the things I do. And plus, it's the reason I don't use Linux is because of Lightroom and Photoshop. So right. Windows might be the right thing for people who are giving up on Macs.
I joined this podcast, I don't know, what was it, 12 years ago? I got to tell you, this is like a dream come true for me to hear that you have finally, finally made your way to the dark side.
Apple pushed me out, baby. Mm-hmm. They pushed me out.
I'll take it. I'll take that as a win.
Yeah. I mean, this has an NVIDIA. It's not a super fast NVIDIA. It's a 1050 Ti, but it's a decent NVIDIA card. Yep. Two drives, standard base, so I can buy an upgraded drive later down the road. I mean, it's just, you know, I can get 64 gigs of RAM in it. I mean, you can't do that with a MacBook Pro.
You know what it doesn't have, which is kind of because it's so powerful, is a USB-C power adapter, right?
No, it does. It comes with a...
It comes with the big honk. Yeah. Have you seen the power supply?
Yeah.
It's huge.
The problem with USB-C is it's limited to 100 watts.
Yeah.
It comes with 135 watts, kind of Lenovo power brick, but you can charge it, albeit more slowly,
on C. Oh, I got you. Yeah. Okay.
So it's the best of both worlds.
Okay.
So what they've gotten rid of is the nice – I really love the Lenovo physical
dock
docks.
Thing,
yeah, they've gotten rid of those. This is a 470.
Yeah.
So this is a couple of years old now. So anyway, that I thought I'd throw in a pick because I
actually almost asked you to do that as a pick. It's funny you just did it anyway. Yeah. No, I mean, I was when you mentioned it earlier, I was thinking – but I thought it was – like I said, I thought it was developer slash
– It's more
Linux
Devi focused. I mean, it's, you know, it's command line. So, I mean, it's, but there is a GUI, but it's for people with a command line. But I think what's going on, thanks to Microsoft and WSL, thank you, Rich Turner, is it, and thanks to Apple being jerks.
No.
There are
courageous,
a lot of people looking.
Courageous.
Courageous. Yeah, a lot of courage to make that butterfly keyboard.
Remember all the complaints there were, though, about the old keyboards and how everyone wanted to change them? And then Apple finally, you know, just rose to the challenge.
It was a public demand, absolutely.
It was like widely acknowledged as one of the best keyboards ever made.
Type 3 E's with every stroke. We want to be able to do that. Actually, the Lenovo keyboards are still my favorite. So
yeah.
That's the other reason for that one. Hey, now we will take a little break, and then it's Mary Jo Foley's turn. She's got the enterprise pick, the code name pick, and most important part of the entire darn show, the beer pick of the week. But first, a word from Capterra. And I gather this is not a name you're familiar with, Paul, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. This is actually a great solution for people who listen to this show. A lot of people use business software, a line of business software, that still requires Internet Explorer 8 or Windows XP, right? You see it all the time. Why do you think Microsoft keeps bundling IE with Windows? Because of these old programs. Somebody wrote it, you know, in 2010, hasn't updated it. They've disappeared off the face of the map. And your boss says, no, you got to use this. Well, I've got a solution. And it's Capterra. It's not a program. It's a search engine for business software. CAPTERRA.com. Don't go to Google. You get a pile of stuff kind of undifferentiated. When you go to Capterra.com/Windows, You're going to see more than 700 specific categories of software, from project management to email marketing, even things like yoga studio management, dog groomer management, just any kind of business software you could imagine. All of it modern, up-to-date. In fact, I should show you, because what's really cool about Capterra is you can go to Capterra.com/windows. I'm typing it in right now. You can pick it. Let's pick a category. I don't know what we want to do. Let's say veterinary. I picked a word that I can really spell.
Is that French?
Veterinary software. There it is. Okay, now, notice it's got a long list. I don't know what the list is. It's 85 filters, but programs. But let's say, no, I want it to be web-based. You got web-based installed, iOS or anything. Let's say we're on web-based, and I do definitely want to be able to schedule appointments, and I got to do my billing in it, and boarding management, image storage, inventory management, patient records. Let's just pick a few of these. Now I'm going to filter the 85 results down. Now it's 34, and these are the programs that do exactly what you want. But now here's another thing. Let's just take the top five here based on those star ratings. Now I can compare them side by side. So I can see exactly what they can do. I can see it says the ideal number of users, how easy to use, customer support. Now where do these stars come from? This is the best part. Capterra has 800,000 reviews and growing of products from real users. They're very carefully vetting all of the reviews so that you know that people who actually are using these programs are reviewing them. That is huge. That means you're getting a very clear idea. See, verified reviewer, an actual vet. You're getting a very clear idea of what the program can do, what it can't do, what works, what doesn't work. They even have vendor responses in here, which is great because Capterra is a place vendors are very well aware of and know that it's important that Capterra do the right thing. I love it. The Hippo Manager is the name of this veterinary software. I wonder if it's only hippos. I don't know. But but they're obviously very active in the forums here, which is fantastic. Millions of people use Capterra every month to find the right tools for their business. If you're suffering with some old program in IE8, or something worse, you're still running Windows XP because you can't upgrade, Capterra.com/windows. Now, what I haven't said is how much it costs. What do you think? Something like that, $50 a month would be reasonable, you know? 20? How about free? How about free? Like, no, you can't pay them, even if you tried. Free. That is a good deal. I don't know why everybody in the world isn't using Capterra. Capterra.com/windows, Capterra.com/windows. Thank them for doing such a great job. And you're thanking us when you use that URL. And I always want to encourage people to use those special URLs. That's how you let them know you saw it on Windows Weekly. And that's information we like them to have and they like to know. Capterra, they pay attention to it. Capterra.com/windows. Capterra's software selection simplified. Normally, you know, our advertisers have a freebie or free trial. You can't do that. It's free. It's not a free trial. It's free. So the special offer is it's free forever. Capterra.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Now we continue on with Mary Jo Foley and her enterprise pick of the week.
My enterprise pick has to do with something Microsoft made a big deal about at Ignite called the Open Data Initiative.
Oops. There you are.
If you remember, I think I talked about it at the time when they announced it last September. It was this big announcement they made on the keynote stage. They said Microsoft, Adobe, and SAP were all coming together. We're going to make it so customers can remove the silos of data that they have, and you can have a single view of the customer across your marketing and ERP and CRM systems. The only thing they didn't tell us is how. How are you going to do it? Like, that's great. You're going to do it, but how? So finally, we're starting to get the first little glimmers of what this thing might look like. At an Adobe conference last week, Microsoft and Adobe and SAP announced that there's going to be something called the ODI Partner Council. And they listed some of the other companies who are going to be part of this open data initiative. It's good because people are saying, hey, you're calling it an open data initiative, but it's not open. There's three of you. Well, now we know there are other companies in there too, like Accenture and Capgemini and Amadeus, Change Healthcare, Hootsuite's in there. Who's not in there? Oracle. Salesforce.
That's not a surprise. Okay.
Right. The companies who you
so
think.
Nobody
okay,
important. If you're,
yeah. When you're thinking about like single view of the customer, common unified schema and semantics across these kinds of apps, you think you've got to have Oracle and Salesforce and those kind of companies in there. So far, they are not. My guess is they will never join, but we'll see.
Because they hate Microsoft.
Right. And Microsoft hates them. And, you know, it is a much more kumbaya Microsoft these days, but they're still enemies of Microsoft and vice versa.
That's
so I'd be surprised if any of those companies do join the ODI, but never say never, I guess. But at least we're starting to hear a few more tidbits about this, about Adobe having a plan to ingest data into a common data lake across all of these different products. And so I'm thinking in the, you know, over the course of the next few months, maybe even at Build, and then at Microsoft's partner show, we'll start hearing even more about ODI.
Does it only work with Azure or?
So everybody who's in it so far seems to be backing Azure as the cloud backbone of this common schema. But they're calling it open, so maybe it will be open to multi-cloud. They haven't mentioned that yet, right, if that's the case.
It does say data could be stored in a customer-chosen and unified data lake. Right.
Yeah. But I'm betting it's Microsoft's data lake.
I don't know anybody else who does data lakes.
Hey, data lake, it's a hot topic.
I don't know anyone else who talks about data lakes.
it's been a frequently used word on this show. Let's
yeah,
just say.
That's true.
Yeah.
It is.
Interesting.
Too frequently, Mary Jo. Too frequently.
A little too frequently.
Well, I just think it's a shame because it's this, you know, for competitive reasons, companies like Oracle and Salesforce don't want data to be interoperable, and no. I think that's a shame.
It is. Yeah.
Interoperability is really important to everybody, except companies that
you're
want to silo
you. You're such a hippie, Leo.
I'm a hippie.
What a guy.
I'm a hippie. And the code name of the week is where I'm storing all my money.
Code name of the week is Cayman.
Oh.
Oh, so you're getting a porch.
So here's what I think this code name might be. This week there was a report in The Information. They said that Microsoft may be about to enter the market that Shopify dominates. So if you know what Shopify is, they're an e-commerce web building platform. So they offer small businesses primarily hosting plans with network storage, compute, integrated payment systems, templates, everything you need to set up your own small business. So Microsoft doesn't really have something like this, and it seems like it would be a kind of a natural fit for them to do this. The Information interviewed somebody from Microsoft who said, yeah, this is a space our big customers are asking us to enter. Sounds like they're thinking about it. So, of course, what did I do? I do what I always do. Went to the Microsoft career site, started looking around for the word e-commerce. And lo and behold, there's something called Cayman. It's a Cayman team at Microsoft inside the Azure Commerce and Ecosystems group that is building a platform for enabling commerce inside Microsoft and for third-party applications. Sounds like it could be it.
Hmm.
Maybe not. Maybe. Hmm. But there is something definitely codenamed Cayman. It has to do with e-commerce. And if you think about all the pieces that Microsoft has in this puzzle already, they have Azure, they have Dynamics, which would provide some of the missing components that you would plug into something like a Shopify solution. They've got a lot of the pieces already. So I wouldn't be surprised for Microsoft to get in here. And if you're wondering how big a business is this, you know, how big a business is this kind of e-commerce web hosting thing? Shopify has 800,000 merchant customers and $1 billion in revenue per year. Microsoft likes to have billion-dollar businesses, as we all know. Makes sense.
That's for sure.
Yep. Unless it's named for the Cayman crocodile, which is going to eat up everything else.
Cornering the crocodile market.
I think that's spelled differently.
Yes.
How about some beer?
about some beer. I often make KBS, Kentucky Breakfast Stout, from Founders, a beer pick because it is so delicious. And every year around late March, it starts trickling out from Michigan, where Founders is, and showing up in tap rooms across the U.S. and beyond. So finally, KBS 2019 is starting to be available to others outside of the Michigan area. If you've never had KBS and you're interested in a barrel-aged stout, you could not go wrong trying this. Coffee, chocolate, bourbon barrels.
You had me at breakfast.
Everything you want.
I literally thought she was going to say, I often make this
for breakfast.
That's I would drink
for some
this
reason
for
as you were talking, I thought that's where you were going.
You know, like, once there's coffee
have a drinking
in it,
problem.
Once there's coffee in it, I think you can justify that it's a breakfast.
You think they
beverage.
Just like the alcohol and the coffee, you know, cancel each other out?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's 12.5%. If you like bourbon, wow. You will probably like it.
So you'll be drunk all day.
You will.
This is probably a little bit like a barley wine beer, I bet.
It is. It's sweet. It's very rich, very chocolatey.
That's so good.
It's so delicious.
It's great on Cocoa Puffs. Just saying.
Haven't tried it on Cocoa Puffs.
If you're
going to
go off keto, go off all the way. That's what I say.
Trying it.
Both feet, you know.
Yeah, so if you see KBS, any version, sometimes you see 2018, 2015. The newest one out now is 2019. And it'll be a little hot, as they say, so a little more alcohol flavor in it now, but still worth drinking.
Isn't this Pliny time? I'm trying to remember when Pliny
Pliny the Elder comes out like around February, March also, yeah. But only in California and Philadelphia, pretty much.
What? I didn't know it was in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they have, this is a big thing around here because they're just up the road a piece. And so, it's like always in the local news because there's lines around the block to get in and taste it.
It's crazy.
Insane.
People plan vacations to go there.
Oh, yeah. We have a couple of guys from the Midwest, I think, who come here every year. They come to the show and then they go have some Pliny. Yep. They come for the grand opening.
Yep.
Which is hysterical.
It's like you're a Beaujolais.
Yeah, it is. Whatever. It's like the new Beaujolais. Yep. Beaujolais is here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be here next week. I'm going to be sipping a Mai Tai on a beach. In Kauai.
Nice.
And I will think of you at 11
a.m. Yeah, I'm sure you will, right?
On Wednesday.
I certainly.
You'll be thinking of us right then.
Right then. Yeah. 8 a.m. Wednesday morning.
God, I wish I was back home doing this.
Man, I wish I were doing Windows Weekly right now. But instead, I'm on the beach.
So you're gone for 2 weeks or one?
No, just one. I'm not going to be gone too long. We're leaving Friday and coming back the following Saturday. So
That's great.
Yeah, it's going to be nice, sun, and fun. I'll be tanned. Of course, Megan Maroney will be filling in next week. So the show must go on. Paul and Mary Jo will be here, 11 a.m. Pacific on Wednesday. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC for Windows Weekly. Each and every week, you can watch live at twit.tv/live. If you do that, get your old computer and go to irc.twit.tv, and you can join all the other old computer users in our chat room. Looking at text on a black screen. If you don't want to be live, though, you can get on-demand versions and play it back on your favorite device. Just go to twit.tv/WW for Windows Weekly or search for Windows Weekly in your favorite podcast. You can even ask your Cortana or your Echo or your Google device, hey, you know who, play the Windows Weekly podcast. And you get the latest version, which is pretty nice. Whatever you do, make sure you come by every week to find out what's new with Microsoft. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Mary Jo Foley's at allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. Paul's at therot.com. Also, leanpub.com for his field guide to Windows 10, which I now have to buy.
Just to understand the recovery options.
Just understand the recovery
options.
Something
to read on your way to Hawaii.
Yeah, read it on your Surface device. Oh, wait. That doesn't work anymore. No, that works. That will still work.
Oh, I can download a PDF.
Yeah, EPUB or PDF. Version.
Yep. And they get those beautiful posters. Those are sweet, too. They really are. Are they still available? They're not sold out yet?
Good. Yep.
They're really cool.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. We'll see you all next time.
Thank you.
On Windows Weekly.